First up, though, Serena Locke is here to run us through this week's biggest rural news. Good morning, Serena.
Hi there, Clint.
Like so many businesses and homes in northern New South Wales, just as people had started to get back on track from the last flood, they've been hit again.
Yes, and one dairy farmer who was moving his stock until 2 a.m. Wednesday morning was also bracing for part of his house to be inundated with water. Gary Eichmann has a property right on the Bellinger River at Fermount, which has been almost completely covered by floodwaters.
Yeah. The milk and I had to swim them out. They were nice and dry when I left them. And I thought, and that paddock's usually, it'll go under, but it's got to be really, really big. But he's coming up now. And this morning I had to swim them out. I had to drop my tacks and swim them, not swim them out, but get wet. I wasn't getting any good numbers wet, but...
You can hear the rain absolutely beating down there, something that had farmers across the region extremely concerned.
Yes, including a blueberry farmer based on the banks of the Arara River at Glen Rae on the mid-north coast, who feared part of his crop would be going underwater. The Arara River reached major flood levels at 12.5 metres. Vic Singh spoke to the ABC late on Tuesday and said his house was flooded in the last event. And he's behind in the harvest and worried how high the water would go this time.
So the last flood damaged the property, cover house, and we got tunnels, and it went over the berries. And we are expecting it's going to be same like this. We are really concerned, really worried about that.
Our colleague Cass Sullivan will be along a little closer to 7 a.m. to get into the details of the federal budget, but let's just get a taste of how the major farming lobby saw things play out.
So farmer groups have described this week's federal budget as stable and steady. The National Farmers Federation says it's happy with funding commitments for regional development in this year's federal budget, but says much more is needed for biosecurity.
Biosecurity is an ever-present danger and risk. Our view is that we are not well enough prepared for the risks that are coming, increasingly coming, I have to say, from the northern part of the globe. So,
and Labor's Shadow Agriculture Minister Julia Collins released a statement in response to the budget saying it was a missed opportunity to secure the long-term future of Australian agriculture.
Well, as we heard from the NFF right there, biosecurity is a major concern, and we do have quite a bit of biosecurity news this week. We've spoken in the last few weeks about the tragic deaths caused by Japanese encephalitis, and this week we got news of a potential new way to curb the future spread of diseases like that.
Yes, a national animal vaccine hub is being built at Bendigo in central Victoria to develop a stronger defence against diseases and viruses like Japanese encephalitis. APM Animal Health says the new lab will manufacture viral vaccines to fill a critical gap in the biosecurity market. Managing Director Dr. Chris Richard says it'll assist the Australian livestock industry with responding quickly to outbreaks of existing diseases, as well as any new diseases that make it into the country in the future.
Yeah, so at the moment we're entering a partnership with La Trobe University, who have a background vaccine platform, and it's that technology that will start to develop a Japanese encephalitis vaccine. Yeah, we're hoping that, given the right circumstances, that we could get a Japanese encephalitis vaccine for pigs in the next 12 months.
And as we covered last week, there is a disease right on our doorstep that has the cattle industry pretty stressed out right now.
Yeah, so the Federal Department of Agriculture says it's working closely with Australia's northern neighbours to try to contain the spread of lumpy skin disease, including buying 500,000 vaccines for cattle in Indonesia. The viral mosquito-borne cattle disease was detected in Indonesia in March, and if the disease got into Australia, a number of trade protocols would be triggered with huge implications for live export and some boxed beef trade.
Most of the biosecurity threats the agriculture industry worries about arrives via our airports and seaports, but this one's at risk of just blowing across the seas.
Yes, so right now Australia's chief vet is in Indonesia working with his counterparts, and the vets are soon arriving in Timor-Leste and Papua New Guinea. And the Deputy Secretary for Biosecurity and Compliance, Dr. Andrew Tung, says there's work underway on surveillance to get a better picture of when and from where exactly the disease could enter Australia.
We've already got some models, but we need some key inputs. What's happened as a result of a change in climate is that wind patterns have shifted. So they tend to be earlier and stronger in some parts of northern Australia. So some of our models just need to be updated with some of the latest climatic information. And we're also working, we've got work underway in the region around some of the possible vectors, midges, stable flies, mosquitoes, just to understand how they move, how they might be carried by the wind.
If one was to be wandering the aisles of a Japanese supermarket on the hunt for some beef, a development this week means Australian beef might no longer be your first choice.
Japan has been a really important market for Australian beef producers, but they may have been outmanoeuvred here by the US competitors in this lucrative market. Australia has had a better deal than the US for beef thanks to the Trans-Pacific Partnership Trade Deal, also known as the CPTPP. But an announcement earlier this week means the United States have just caught up and fast, and now we've had a huge import quota, but over the last few years, as our herd recovered from the drought, we haven't really exported as much to Japan. So the Japanese government has given a sizable amount of quota we weren't actively using to the US. Simon Quilty from Global AgriTrends says it's a huge development that will cost the Australian industry in the long run.
It was always going to be all about the future and the fact that when we did rebuild the herd, that Australia would be able to capitalise on that additional access into Japan, much more so than America. The net effect is, though, that now America is definitely on an even playing field, and that part of the market now has opened up to them dramatically. So the net effect is that Australia has lost that enormous advantage that we once thought we had.
We talk often of the things lately that are skyrocketing in price, but there's one very important farm input that's going the other way.
Yes, water prices in the Murray-Darling are dirt cheap and making it one of the few commodities that's not going up in price, as you say. The La Nina climate pattern means water in the basin is definitely not in short supply and prices are falling as a result. Lex Batters from water broking firm H2OX says prices are likely to stay low for the rest of the year.
Look, it may not be this cheap. It depends on rainfall. Obviously, if it stays very wet, we're going into winter with very full storages and likelihoods of very strong opening allocations in the Murray and the Goulburn. We're looking at a likely 100% allocation by August, if not before. So I think we'll see definitely see a lid on water prices early next season. And if it keeps raining, then we will see prices at this level. There's not a lot of spare storage space anywhere around, and farmers won't be using much.
Australian superfine wool producers are rejoicing in high prices with the mass return to the office worldwide after 2 years of lockdowns.
Yes, people are getting back into the office and suit sales are soaring. One company, Peter Jackson, says sales have jumped 60% since the peak of the pandemic, and the pattern is repeating in major markets across Europe and North America. And Central Victorian farmer Jeremy Phillips and his family produce fine micron wool used in those high-end suits. And he says despite the rising production costs, as we've been talking about, he's over the moon to see his wool price double.
So, yeah, it's only a few years ago, you were struggling to get probably half that. So, obviously, when you're getting twice as much for your product, it makes a hell of a difference. Yeah, especially with, obviously, the cost of production goes up and up, and obviously you get some reward. It's fantastic.
The online version of that story interviews the suit salesman, and he said everyone was coming into the store because their old suits don't fit anymore. So I guess we're seeing the flow-on impact of all that extra wine and sourdough that people ate during the lockdowns.
Yes, home baking. It did it for me too.
Serena Locke, thank you as always for that fabulous wrap of Rural News this week.